Hi everyone, welcome back to 33 Founders. I'm really excited that you're with us today because I'm here with Jeff Dachas, the founder of OneDrop. Thanks so much for being with me, Jeff.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me.
So we just started out and we were chatting about your launch at the Launch Festival, which was hugely impacting. Can we start out with you explaining how OneDrop is affecting diabetics' lives?
Well, you know, we're a really new company, so we're not even in market yet with our app, our glucometer, or our supply subscription service. But the idea is to, first of all, enable people to simply collect the data about their food, fitness, glucose, and insulin intake, and then share that data with everybody else who happens to be on the OneDrop platform. And it's that sharing, I think, that really makes OneDrop platform decidedly different than what we've seen in the marketplace. You know, I have struggled with my own diabetes over the years, since I've been diagnosed. You know, in various incidents, you know, Chinese food's always a problem for me, or running, you know, not really sure, you know, how much insulin to take, you know, after a run or before a run, or what food to, you know, how to get it right. I mean, honestly, it's really hard. You're doing math all the time, and getting diabetes right is not something that comes easy to most people. And so if we can share our data with everybody else and then learn from everyone else's journey along the way, I think that there's a huge opportunity to help people make better choices. And learning from people like me, you know, I'm not learning from a doctor or a hospital or a pharmaceutical company or somebody who may not have the same sort of empathy that someone like me does have. And so that's the genesis of the platform. And then there's a whole bunch of other aspects to it to just make it easier for people to collect and share that information with everyone else.
One thing I love about the app too, and you guys actually won Best Design at the Launch Festival, is I don't feel like it's a medical app. Like, it doesn't look like a lab to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, we're specifically, you know, appealing to people's desire to live their life
with diabetes.
And it's about living your life. It's not about having diabetes. It's about, you know, taking the sharp reminder each day when you check your blood, that sharp reminder to be aware of and empowered to live your life in a great way, to think about those future college graduations that you're going to end up going to, those great weddings or parties that are going to be coming, you know, down the line, or you'll be able to see your kid graduate. And that opportunity is one that we take each day with each one drop of blood, one drop at a time. And so it's really about, not about medical stuff, it's about living your life, you know, and that's hopefully what we've captured.
I think that's what you really got across when you were pitching at the Launch Festival, and one of the judges said that it's one of the best pitches he's ever seen, especially because you ended with three huge announcements. You said it's Apple Watch ready, it's free, and that in fact you were the woman who fell in the elevator. I know you've done a lot of pitches before, but did you practice that pitch, or how does it go? Is it rehearsed, memorized?
It's I guess rehearsed. We spent a fair amount of time preparing for the, you know, what we wanted to say. it wasn't completely off the cuff. I think, you know, presentation-wise, you know, that's what it was. We presented, you know, some thoughts and ideas. The Apple Watch ready stuff, you know, we will be ready as soon as the Apple Watch launches with the OneDrop app. It being free, you know, our goal is to relentlessly reduce the cost and inconvenience of living your life with diabetes. And, you know, I want to continue to drive at the cost reduction aspects so that testing your blood is either you know, cheap or free to anybody who needs to test, because you're not able to manage what you don't measure. And so I want to make it as easy as possible for people to measure as much as they can, as often as they can, to share that data with everybody else and to learn from everyone else.
How is it going to work on the Apple Watch? Will it be a similar interface?
The Apple Watch has certain characteristics to it that are I'd say limited in the functionality. So we're working within the constraints of what Apple Watch can do right now, and I'm certain that the platform will be expanding. But right now, it's going to primarily be another form of notifications. So you'll receive notifications on the watch as opposed to having to pick them up. So, for instance, let's say you've eaten a meal, maybe 60 to 90 minutes later, you'll get a notification that you should probably, check your blood because food impacts, glucose. And really, it's that subtle reminder, that subtle motivation, that happens on the watch. And it's really easy. Another thing that, we're going to be doing is just enabling you to see where you're at a glance. So, you sort of... And that's more than anything, some of the basic functionality that the Apple Watch will be providing.
Every time I think about the Apple Watch 2, there's a lot of discussion about whether or not you need it. And even though taking my phone out and turning it on is such a small task, the fact that I can just look at my wrist feels like a totally different game.
Yeah, I think there'll be naysayers about form, and there is always about it. I think generally speaking, I like to think of the amount of time that it takes for you to take out your phone and look at a notification, and then take action on that notification, and the usefulness of those notifications. And on your phone, there's certain circumstances where that's a time saver, but there's also certain circumstances where you're spending a lot of time checking out, the little red dots that tell you how many messages you got, or all of those little notification things. And I think what the watch is going to do is reduce the amount of time that you're spending on your phone by getting the most important information that's timely to you in a quick glance that you can take action on, quickly, and saving the more time intensive stuff for when you actually have the device out. So my guess is that Apple Watch is really going to be about convenience and time saving with regards to that notification layer, that messaging layer, that top level lightweight set of communications that occur. And we'll start to see that evolve over time into something interesting. And I highlight that as a parallel to look at something like WhatsApp or Facebook Messenger with 700 million users or 600 million users respectively, or Snapchat or some of the Tencent or Sina Weibo or some of the other messaging platforms that are out there worldwide. It's that lightweight messaging layer that's going to end up driving a lot of the interesting new applications and new opportunities, as opposed to the desktop web translated to the mobile phone. And that's what Apple Watch presents, is from my perspective, as far as opportunities go. And when it comes to mobile health, when it comes to being able to be aware of how you're doing and where you are and what's happening in your life with regards to, let's say, or fitness, or whatever that your mobile health goals are, the watch is going to be one of the primary interfaces to enable those motivational and notifications for behavioral change.
Great. So I want to shift gears for a couple of minutes and chat about your journey so far. You've experienced tremendous success, but you've also had some hardships. As a founder, what has been one of the biggest challenges that you've had to overcome?
As a founder, there are enormous challenges each and every day. And I'm we've been very fortunate, and I'm grateful for the opportunities that we've been given to do interesting work with amazing creative people, grow substantially, prominent businesses. Razorfish is 20 years old this year. It's one of the few companies that are 20 years old, period, on the planet, but it survives sort of.
How does that feel? Do you just look back and smile? Back and want to do a fist pump?
Yeah, I can't take credit for it. I have to give credit to all of the, literally thousands of amazing, wonderful, talented, intelligent people that I've had the opportunity to work with over the years. And then since, we left Razorfish, the people that have carried that vision forward all the way through where it is today, that's theirs. And so, yeah, I'm fist pumping for all those great, amazing people and all that amazing work and the amazing clients that we had the opportunity to work with and all that. So that's theirs to fist pump, right? And I'm here to just, you know, do it along with them. But you know, creating one of the world's leading brands in and that dominates the space that it's in is something that we can, you know, step back and have a little bit of a smile about. It's something that's very special.
How about these?
And so as far as hardships, go ahead. Yeah, you know, every day is a hardship as an entrepreneur. You know, every day is the ups and downs of getting a business off the ground. You start with something sort of in your head, and then you manifest it into something that people use or businesses buy, or, you know, a thing that people can get motivated and excited about each and every day. Ideally, it makes money and sustains itself for, you know, for years and years and years, and becomes the dominant sort of business in its field. And that's not an easy task, but it's one that sort of I do because I have to more than anything.
How about the experience of selling a company? Because you sold the Dodgers Group to Sprinklr and then you stayed on with them. What does that feel like?
Well, Sprinklr's an amazing company, and you're going to see amazing things from them. I mean, truly amazing things. Raji Thomas is a phenomenal leader and a extremely bright, and he's attracted some amazing people around him. And so, you know, kudos to Sprinklr. You know, they're going to take this, you know, all the way to the goal line, and you know, so lots of exciting stuff coming out of Sprinklr, you know, soon, and you can expect great things from them. You know, the space Dodgers Group was in, we had built some very, very interesting technology and an amazing services team that was doing really great work. But as the marketplace changes, you know, you're playing chess really with everybody in the field. And so in this instance, you know, we thought it was best to team up with a winner like Sprinklr and Raji. And, you know, I've bought a lot of companies in my life, and I haven't sold many. But in this instance, it was really a 1+1=3. It was like the peanut butter and chocolate combo that was going to enable both businesses to really succeed in a way that separately they may not have. And so, you know, you take your ego out of the game and you say, what's great for the employees, what's great for our customers, and what's going to make the most impact on the marketplace. And so teaming up with Sprinklr was an extremely logical choice and a great one, I think, for everybody.
You've mentioned all the different things and how there's different hardships. You've explored so many different things, even to DJing and ballet. How have all those exploratory things gotten you where you are today? The whole trial and error mentality.
Yeah, for me, I think a lot of the trial and error that I'm experiencing was early on in my exploration of what I'll call the highly fragmented media, telecommunications, and entertainment, you know, landscape. So what I was really interested in was the expression, production, distribution, and monetization of ideas. And I didn't know that yet, but so I was, you know, interested in the theater, and I was, you know, studied classical ballet, and I was a DJ, and I, was photo editor of the school yearbook, and was on the literary arts magazine, and sort of all these different forms of expression. And I'll say that I sucked at all of them. But what I was good at was understanding the modes of communication, understanding how to work with creative people and how to express ideas, distribute them, monetize them, and turn them into something bigger than just an idea. And so, you know, I took all those skills and wove them together. And as the internet started to emerge, you know, it became the thread that glued, as digital emerged, it became the thread that glued all of that together, that enabled the production, distribution, and monetization of ideas across all sort of these highly fragmented, you know, modes come together. And so, you know, the internet was sort of the beginning of my career, having done a lot of trial and error to figure out what I was good at and what I really wasn't at, which is I'm not good at many things at all. But I found sort of a path that enabled me to bring all those talents together. And that's sort of what we ended up, you know, building businesses off of. And I've been doing that for now, you know, almost 20 years, whether it's Dotchess Group, you know, where that digital technology emerged, not just to unify, you know, production, distribution, and monetization of ideas, but then began to empower every one of us with this democratized production, distribution, and monetization tool that enable us to share our information with anybody worldwide for free in HD on the go. And so when you're empowered to share your kitty cat photos or your gluten-free cupcake recipes or your manifestos for the government or your new idea for your new app that you're going to make, this thing enables us all to do that more readily, more cheaply, and distribute ourselves more widely. For the first time, literally, in the history of mankind, we've never seen anything this powerful, enabling people to do that kind of thing more, again, more widely, you know, less expensively, and more powerfully. And so this democratization of the tools of self-expression are truly revolutionizing the way entrepreneurship, the way you know, people are going to be able to take control of their lives from what was this old, you know, highly fragmented, highly bureaucratic, old line of thinking, old ways of doing business structures, and turn our economy and our society and the people around us into empowered, motivated, and, self-sustaining individuals. And we've seen it in the blogosphere. You see it with companies that rocket to the stratosphere, like Snapchat or, you know, these other companies where, you know, Mark Zuckerberg even, you know, to see the growth of a company in 8 years become, you know, $1.3 billion in user base and still just getting going, you know, it's something wildly special. And so what we're doing with OneDrop is kind of like on a teeny little level, the same kind of thing. We're enabling people to share how they live their lives each and every day with each other. And, you know, I'll do some magic in the background with big data and cloud computing and algorithms to help you make better choices.
When you talk about all of the new things happening, what's your take on all of the live streaming video conversations that are going on right now?
Are you talking about Meerkat and Periscope? I don't know. I think that the idea has been around a while. So this isn't, you know, Meerkat's not the first time we've seen this story, whether it's Quick or Justin TV or, you know, there's a bunch of different versions of the same kind of flavor, Google Hangouts, whatever, Skype. But I think, you know, this lightweight, super easy to use interface and the ability to distribute instantly worldwide with your Twitter following, you know, it's kind of just a simple, lightweight, but exciting, you know, way to share what you're doing right now. And if you're willing to type it in 140 characters, what are you doing right now? You know, oh, I'm having a sandwich. Then what does it matter whether you're videotaping yourself eat a sandwich? I mean, not videotaping, but whether you're, you know, live streaming your sandwich eating. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I don't know who are the followers of the, you know, who's going to consume, you know, low production quality, lightweight video snapshots of what people are doing. So I don't know how that's going to evolve, but I certainly think it's going to be one of primary ways in which people start to share things. So I don't know if it's Meerkat or Periscope or what ends up being the solution, but I think this way, easy to capture, easy to distribute video, is the beginning of something, you know, potentially huge.
I want to chat for a couple of minutes, Jeff, about some great insights that I've learned about you doing some research One of the things I've read is that you said that you should burn yourself into the minds of people you meet. I imagine there are a lot of ways to do that. Can you give me an example of really making an impact on someone?
Where that came from, by the way, was I'm a mentor at this organization, a great organization, by the way, for startup founders called the Founders Institute. Mm-hmm. And in that mentoring process, I was recorded, in one of the sessions that we were doing. And so we were giving kind of maybe it was a top 10 list. I can't even remember, but the things that a startup entrepreneur needs to do to market themselves better. And so that was the context for that sort of little snippet of advice. By the way, there were a bunch of other things on that list, but, making sure that when you meet people that you are memorable to them, is how you end up standing out as a founder. There's lots of noise in the system and there's lots of people that can help you and would be happy to help you. And lots of people that are willing to just kind of say, hey, I don't have time for you. So how do you, make sure that they remember you, that they are aware of your presence? And that takes effort, I'm not here to advocate one methodology or the other, but I think it takes a concerted effort. You can't be a wallflower. You're not going to get on people's radar or be able to stand out in a highly competitive, highly crowded field without making the effort to burn yourself into sort of their psyches in some manner, way, shape, or form. I don't think that means doing stupid stunts or anything like that or wearing a loud Hawaiian shirt. But I think it does mean, coming prepared with your A game, knowing what you're saying and being very crisp and articulate about it, know where you stand and what your vision is and what you're trying to accomplish, and be forceful in the communication of your thoughts and ideas. And I think with that, people notice, and that's really what you want. You want people to notice, that you're exceptional at what you do.
It goes right into another insight I saw posted on Twitter that you said, I believe, at one of these meetups, and you said, to motivate people, play to win, not to exit. Talk like you've already won. What does it mean to talk like you've already won?
So that's some transliteration of somebody interpreting what I said. But what I did say is, as a startup founder, if you're only in it for the exit, which is a financial win, I don't believe you may find some success. I don't think great companies are created from founders who desire financial exits as their primary mode. I think great companies are built from people who see what they think is a win in the marketplace. So I want to create the largest digital marketing solutions firm in the world. I want to create the place where all of the best talent in the world comes to do the most amazing and passionate work, where the clients are delighted and, I'm just making this up, obviously, but the point is that, winning means that you've created a dominant company that continues to survive and thrive in the marketplace, not one that you are focused entirely on building to sell. And that's, I think, what I was trying to say to these founders, which was, focus on winning, not on selling, because if you focus on winning, then you may end up selling at some point, in your trajectory, but you will have built something of real value along the way. And I hope that provided some clarification for you.
Yeah, that's great. Now that you're advising a lot of different startups and founders later in your career, are you enjoying that aspect?
Yeah. I was fortunate enough to have some folks, take me under their wing when I was younger. And I think it helps to have people who have bumped their heads and made mistakes and screwed stuff up, which I certainly have, and bring some of that insight, you know, to people who are just starting out. I sometimes, I was on an airplane yesterday and I was sitting next to a woman who is just about to start her own business. And I was really excited to hear about what she was up to. And I realized that I've been fortunate enough to gain, you know, whatever small, modest amount of wisdom over the years about what I do. So I was able to share some of those things with her. And then she obviously has her own perspectives, and I learned a lot from her too. So it was a really great exchange. But I guess those kinds of exchanges are really what I look for when either mentoring or working with startup founders.
What are the top resources that you use to learn?
It's going to sound crazy, but I read the Wall Street Journal every day, cover to cover. And not online. I read the newspaper, and usually the New York Times as well. And what that does is give me sort of a broad perspective about all different kinds of business and all different kinds of perspectives on business. And I know that, you know, may sound weird to some people or whatever, but that for me has always been since I graduated undergraduate, you know, one of the things that I gained the most out of over time. I read a lot. I mean, I read a lot. So I'll say that reading in general, all the, you know, industry blogs that you may be exposed to, and you know, different types of you know, specific books that are in your category or outside of your category, I think enable people to broaden their perspective, you know, and gain a bunch of different sort of views on organizational design, management styles and techniques, marketing, you know, approaches, branding and identity, you know, sort of focus, user experience design versus, you know, product design versus interface design versus information architecture. All those things come together to, I think, make a great product or service. And I think, those are the kinds of things collectively that have helped me along the way.
What are some of the blogs that you read?
Let's see. I mean, I read Tech Meme to get an overview of what's happening each day in the tech world, and then I typically will dig into, you know, some TechCrunch, some Adweek and AdAge, some Healthline, Diatribe, specifically now. I can keep going. I mean, I read a lot.
So how many hours would you say you read a day?
I probably read a good, 90 minutes or more a day.
Very cool. So Jeff, before we go, two questions for you. The first one...
You froze up on me.
Saying before we go, two more questions. The first one is, having had success building companies, having one file for an IPO, selling companies, and now starting OneDrop, what's the journey like as a founder later on? What are some things that you did before that you want to bring to OneDrop, and what are some things that you did before and think, hey, I'm going to try to think of a new way to lead the team here?
Let's see. You know, technology has changed the way we communicate a lot. So, so the phone isn't as useful a tool as maybe it used to be, or conference calls even. You know, I think there are tons of collaboration tools, shared documents, shared, you know, cloud folders, cloud computing, et cetera. All that stuff has changed over the years. I think also the way people expect to work has changed over the years. And so I think part of, you know, just growing a modern company is working with the modern, you know, tools and technologies that are available that enable people to be efficient, to empower them, and to help them, you know, make the best choices that they can make. You know, early at Razorfish, we pioneered some of the modern work modes you see today, you know, like open plan seating and, you know, all the kinds of things that you'd think of, let's say at Google, like snacks or sort of little things that help keep people, you know, healthy and, you know, excited about coming to work and engaged in what they're doing. You know, and I'm not saying we got it all right ever. Just saying that I think we've been fairly progressive in trying to embrace whatever new modes will work best for whatever the company is that I'm working on right now.
Very cool.
And there's no right answer. It's you know, there every company and every personality type and every approach is valid under some circumstances. So you know, there's no one size fits all for any of that.
Okay, so then my last question is, if we're sitting here and it's 2018, 3 years from now, what do you want to be chatting about when it comes to OneDrop? What's your biggest dream for the company?
So OneDrop is really a, let's call it a, let me step back. The dream of enabling people to make better wellness choices and stay healthy with data is really the goal. And so how can we make it simple and easy to collect data and then turn that into actionable insights that empower people to make better wellness choices? And so the goal would be to start with diabetes and help use the information that we all, you know, are sharing and inputting and saving and using, you know, with these devices, and start with diabetes and help people with diabetes, you know, make better choices. And then, you know, ideally over time, if we're lucky or if we have the opportunity, it would be great to apply some of that same thinking to, you know, across you know, all disease categories. And so I can envision a company that is enabling people to share, connect, and make better choices, you know, outside of or in adjunct to or connection with the sick care system, you know, that takes care of you when you're sick.
I love it, and I'm looking forward to watching you lead the way for that. Can we close, Jeff, with you sharing how people can stay up to date with OneDrop?
Yeah, please, first of all, sign up for early access at signup.onedrop.today. That would be great. And then the app should be live in the App Store sometime in mid-April. The Apple Watch app will come live, you know, shortly thereafter when the Apple Watch is available. And then stay tuned as we begin on our journey in helping make the product a lot better. Hopefully, we'll get a lot of feedback from people. We'll know where we're screwed up and where we can improve and begin on this journey.
Very cool. Thank you so much for being with me today.
Oh, thank you for taking the time. I really appreciate you having me on.